Hello and welcome to the Daily Reprieve, where we provide essay speaker meetings, workshops, and conferences in podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast. If you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Please consider donating monthly by clicking the Donate Monthly button. However, one-time donations are always welcome. Just click the Donate Now button. Now, without further ado, this episode of The Daily Reprieve.
There we go. Yeah, it's out in the open. Yeah, I'm a member of this program, and I'm glad to be here. Now, it's lucky that I'm here. I've had a wake-up call and advice, but luckily I had completely forgotten about the meeting and I'd been up all night working on my figures. So I was actually sitting here at the computer doing my figures while I was watching the film The 12 Monkeys. Again, you know, just sort of, and now I'm here and there's about 12 monkeys on here as well. So like, so we're all in, you know, an army of lunatics, you know. Actually, I always sort of like to sort of say, you know, that I think I'm a Martian, and, you know, and I come here to meet up with the other Martians, you know, because it's only here I'm going to actually come across people that like actually understand me and that I understand. And it's a strange thing that I would come to a crowd of really sick people to find people who will understand me. And that I can find that wherever I am in whatever. I'm in a number of programs and I'm in a number of programs because I'm high maintenance and, you know, I have an addictive personality and I will find something to give me the dopamine hit that I'm looking for. You know, I'm looking for something to fill up that thing that was missing in me. And it's actually, you know, I have a chemical imbalance. And so I didn't fit into the world in the way that, you know, is expected of one when you arrive in this place. And my uncle said, you know, Brendan, you just came out running and you were just, you know, you were just 90 miles an hour the whole time. And I am, and I'm still 90 miles an hour the whole time. Luckily, I've been up all night. I'm a little bit slower, but the thing about it is I was told from an early stage on that, or I was led to believe that there was something wrong with me. You know, why couldn't I be like other people? Why couldn't I just do, why couldn't I be like John? Or why couldn't I be like David? Or why couldn't I be like whoever, you know? And I thought like, it's not really my goal in life to be like them. I'm quite happy being who I am in my own way. If you just stop telling me that there's something wrong with me. And I was always seemed to be in trouble, you know, from the age 4 or 5, like I was just in trouble and I couldn't sit still. I couldn't be comfortable in class, in school. I was always looking for attention and I'd get it, but the attention I'd get would mean that at 5 or 6 years of age, I was standing out in the hall waiting for the headmaster to come around with a leather belt to hit me, you know, to sort of say, we've baited into you, lad, you know, and then they couldn't beat anything into me, you know. All they could do is, the one thing that they did give me was they gave me this feeling like, okay, I'm out here again, I'm in trouble again, and I don't like being hit, and I feel like I'm a coward because I can't, you know, I'm pulling my hand away or whatever. And, you know, so I got this sense of being offbeat with everybody else. And I wasn't particularly bothered about it, but they were. And then I found, you know, I found out how to relieve myself physically about 12. And then of course, you know, I felt like, you know, that was kind of separating me from other people and it separated me from my family. And maybe there was an embarrassment about it and whatever. But I got it into my head that I can remember, you know, drawing this picture of this woman. I might have been 13 or so, but it was off the cover of a magazine and she had a net sort of, a hat with this net on it over her face. I can remember it still. And I sort of drew this picture and I was fascinated by it, whatever. And I was up and running and, you know, I managed to get alcohol by the time I was 14 and I was out with some sergeant's daughter. I was in the sort of the military Ireland. They had this kind of, it was a kind of voluntary part of the military, and you were supposed to get in. You were 17. I was in when I was 14, and you know, I was off on camp in the summer, you know, learning how to fire rifles, and I'd been on another camp learning how to fire mortars, and you know, and I didn't drink alcohol, but you know, I was drinking minerals and the other people. It seemed to me it was costing me more. And the second week I was there, I started drinking, and you know, and within like a couple of days, I was drinking on everybody under the table. But I was out with the sergeant's daughters at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was going to be doing a lot of all of this from now on. And, you know, it was a few years more before I actually got to, you know, have sex with a woman. And, you know, and it was a real, you know, I'd been chasing it down for quite a while. And I remember her standing there in this mobile home, looking out the window, you know, talking about, she was in university and I was still in school. And she was talking about, oh, was that it? Like, and sort of, you know, and her boyfriend was off in Australia. And I thought, I'm never going to have that happen again. I'm never going to be embarrassed like that again. And within a week, like I was with her and with her, you know, on the side, I was with her best friend, and, you know, and I was just up and running, and it was great. And I was, you know, lots of my friends who were happy enough to go out and sort of get drunk or, you know, take other substances and whatever. But me, if I didn't have sex, like sort of, you know, it was a wasted night. It was just not like, I mean, I had to, and it became, I had to have sex. And it was just a complete obsession. And I chased it down, and I spent years chasing it down. And you know, at the start, I used to get this tingling in my fingers, and I would just feel like it was just the most wonderful thing. I, you know, D.H. Lawrence wrote that book, Chatterley's Lover. And in there, at some stage, she's having it off with the gardener. But she's talking, it's being talked about in terms of this golden sense. And that's what I felt, you know, I just felt it was just the most beautiful thing. And I would be walking on air, you know, after I'd been able to act out with someone. And it was just like, you know, I was home. It was great. Like, it was just this incredible feeling. And, you know, and I chased it down, but over time it got, you know, relationships didn't work out, and I became more cynical about things. And I just got to a stage that this was it. But it ended up in total chaos. Like, you know, 30 years later, I mean, it's 20, 30 years later, I'm just in this total chaos. And I've been through a marriage, and I've lost the marriage, and, you know, and I've decided that, you know, I don't want to be in love with anybody anymore. And I'm just going to go, you know, and I'm going to find it in brothels or whatever. And there again, I end up in some crazy relationship with a woman that I met there. And, you know, she used to be in a taxi circling the pubs, and she had the barman paid off to tell them if I was there, and she'd be waiting for when it came out. And it was absolutely insane. And, you know, and by that stage, I'm like with alcohol and other substances, and I'm in a Latin American country, and it's just absolute chaos. And I'm getting phone calls and people screaming at me down the phone. She's screaming down the phone, you're going to pay. And it was horrendous, you know, and I got back into AA, and I started trying to get sober there. And there was women in the program that were hitting on me, and I was saying, like, I'm not going to have anything to do with, like, these, I'm not going to have anything to do with anybody in here. Like, I'm nuts enough, like, but, like, sort of, you know, like, I don't need another nutcase with me. And, you know, I was going to 3 meetings a day just to get through the day without a drink. And, you know, and I had a girlfriend at the time that I really wanted to be in this relationship. And I remember saying to a friend of mine, you know, that I didn't want to muck this relationship up. And this is before I got back into AA. And he's saying to me, well, don't. And I'm thinking, you know, I have no, there's no option. You know, I'm an alcoholic and I use a lot of other substances. You know, I'm definitely going to muck it up. There's no question about it. You know, it's just the story of my life. You know, everything gets mucked up and this one is going to go the same way. And, you know, and it did. I ended up messing it up in a bad way. And anyway, I got into AA and I'm trying to stay sober in AA. And then I'm in this relationship, and you know, like I get into AA and, you know, let's say it was a real mess and she found out about the mess and I had to tell her, look, you know, I've been here and I've been with like sort of, you know, this group of women and a bag of powder and all sorts of stuff going on. And it's just been lunatic and she's going nuts at me. And then she moves in with me a month later, you know, and she's in there and I'm trying to get sober in AA and she's there and she's on like, man, and the criticism is going on and stuff, whatever. And I get all her stuff and I put it in my car and I take her to her friend's house and she's saying, but you're the alcoholic. And I'm saying, yeah, but like, you know, if you keep going on at me, like I'm going to drink again. And I know now it's going to kill me. You know, I know it's going to kill me because it's just, and I know that one drink, because I had 3.5 years without a drink, but I didn't do any program. And, you know, I picked up after 3.5 years and I threw everything away the same night, you know, within 6 months, I was like, sort of, you know, I was, my wife had left me, which was really good, you know, but, you know, so I knew like sort of that it was going to be chaotic. And, you know, I trundled along in AA and I was about a year sober and I was in Hawaii and there was these guys in the program and they were started talking about, they were going to SLAA, you know, and they were saying like, you know, what's this all about? And they were sort of saying, you know, about the lust side of things. And I was saying, you know, well, you know, yeah, I don't know. And this guy's saying, hey man, I gave you a massage. You're like, hey, you need this, you know, you need this, you know, you're just wired. Yeah. And I was like, because it was like, you know, I could have gone anyway, you know, except I was Irish. And like that was going to like sort of get in the way of a lot of things. But I got into SLAA and I realized there was something there. And by this stage, you know, this woman was back with me again. And I remember she came up to Hawaii with my daughter. And, you know, I'd be telling my daughter stories and I'd be falling asleep and she's getting annoyed. And I'm saying like, you know, I think I got a problem with the lust as well. And, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, because I'm hearing that like, you know, I shouldn't be acting out because of all the lust and whatever. And she's thinking, you know, you must be with somebody else. And I was sort of like, oh, it's just chaotic. It was just a mess. You know? Anyway, I was trying to stay sober in various different ways. And I really wanted that relationship to work out. And I, you know, and it was up and down and we never were together for more than 3-6 months at a time. And it was just, it was going up and down. And the relationship felt, you know, it fell apart. And at this stage now I'm off in another country working and I came back and I met up with her and I knew that if we were going to be together, she'd want to have a child. And I really did want to be with her and she wanted to be with me. And within like days, she was pregnant. And then I was, you know, I was working on the other side of the world and I was coming back and forth and whatever, but it was really stressed out and she was really stressed out and she had a lot of her own stuff going on. And it was kind of chaotic. And within weeks of my son being born, like that relationship had just, you know, it just crumbled completely. And I was out of my head. I was out of my head. I was just like, what do I have to do? I just wanted this to work. And I've been working programming this, that, and the other. And I'm racing around town. I'm looking for that woman that used to sort of cause me all the trouble. And I've been trying to stay away from her for years. But like, here I am and I'm racing around. And there's a friend of mine he's an alcoholic as well, but he's not in a program. And, you know, he was the best friend of my father-in-law. And my father-in-law had died from alcoholism and, you know, and he's there saying, Brendan, don't go after that. But by this stage, that woman as well says she's had a kid by me. And he's saying, it's not yours. Doesn't look anything like you. It's not yours and whatever. And I'm off my head. And I managed to get on the plane and get back to flying back to the other side of the world, back to where I had a job. And I was getting back into, you know, I'm off the drink and I'm trying to get sober. But I've got this woman now with a child and like, it's just, and I'm trying to maintain that. And so I'm 4 months there and 4 months in this other country back in Latin America. And then I'm 4 months traveling and it's just, I'm all over the place. And I'm trying to sort of, you know, I'm just doing everything. I'm trying to stay sober and I'm trying to, you know, and I get into the SA actually it was in Japan and I get into SA in Japan and there's like nobody sort of staying sober there, you know, and I get a sponsor and he's got like, you know, he tells me about it at one stage. I remember where it was standing exactly on the street with him. And he's talking about how he'd been sober for 3 years after his wife had left him and because of this thing. And that meant, you know, if he was sober, it meant he hadn't had sex for 3 years. And I'm thinking, that's insane. It's not like, there's no way. Like, I'm going to work this program really well because I know the programs are done. Is that 5 minutes left or something?
That's 5 minutes left.
Oh boy, I've only started. Anyway, this is going to go on for a few weeks. Jason was saying, could I do this for a few weeks? I said, oh, I see, like, I don't know if I can do this, but here we are. Anyway, I'm saying that's like absolutely, you know, there's no way. I'm going to work the program. I'm going to do the steps really well. My higher power is going to take away all my defects of character. I'm going to be back with her. We're going to be having great intimacy together. And that's the sort of thing, whatever, it's all going to work out. That's 19 years ago. And that didn't work out. Now I'm still, you know, I'm still obsessive. But I had a sponsor. Like, I used to call this guy my sponsor from hell. Like, and he was my sponsor in this program. And he was, you know, the first thing he ever told me to do was shut up. And like, I mean, you know, this guy was ex-British military, and I'm Irish, you know, like, so, you know, let some ex-British military guy tell you, shut up, you know. And the guys who were with me, they thought like I'd hit him. And I realized somehow very quickly, I realized he was telling the voices in my head to shut up. And it was those voices in my head that were telling me, well, why not? Like, why not? Like this woman, I was trying to explain to my sponsor of the time that like sort of this woman, this French woman would come over to see me and that I would like, I'd been intimate with her and whatever. And, you know, I'm saying, but she's not a prostitute. And like, you know, she's the first woman I've ever been with, like, so that I met sober. You know what I mean? In my life. And like, so what's wrong with this? You know, and he's going, Jesus, Brendan, would you just stop? And he rang me up and he says, Brendan, I can't take you anymore. You know, you've got an answer for everything, you know? So I said, well, you ask this fella from hell, like, to ask him if he'll be my sponsor. Because like, you know, I mean, the thing I didn't like him, but what I liked was his sobriety. I wanted to have what he had, because when I looked at him, I knew he'd be sober tomorrow. Because, you know, he was just doing this thing. He had this military approach to sobriety, but like he was staying sober and I couldn't stay sober. And I remember like, I mean, it really was great, because like I was always, you know, I only saw him once a year, which was just about as much as either of us could take. Actually, the guys in my home group, when they heard he was going to be my sponsor, they were taking bets on how long we'd work together. And the longest they gave us was 2 weeks, you know. And he actually was my sponsor for 12 years. And, you know, he wasn't trying to be my friend at all. You know, I mean, if he was, he was going the wrong way about it. But what he was concerned about was my sobriety. And he was more concerned about my sobriety than he was about my friendship. And I remember ringing him up one time. You know, I was back in Latin America. I said, oh man, it's really hot. And the girls are all here and you're all walking around. They got like some nice stuff there. And he says, keep that for your therapist. It's like, basically, you know, you've got a program. Are you doing the program? If you're doing the program, you're going to stay sober. You know, that's it. Like, that's it. All the rest of it is just noise. And, you know, that's, like, that really is it. And, you know, and if I was saying about it, because Jason said, well, you do the steps, so I think you guys are in for a long haul. But, like, it's, you know, the first step is just that. It's like, I'm powerless. I need a power that can take away this obsession, this need, this absolute total need to get my drug. Because, you know, an orgasm is really like basically what it is it's like a real dopamine hit. You know, basically what I'm doing is I'm drugging myself. And it's a really, really powerful drug. And it hits the receptors in the brain, which are like sort of, you know, which are just looking out for the drug. And that's basically it. And the reason I need that hit is because if I don't get it, I'm restless, irritable, and discontent because I don't fit in the world. And they're constantly going to be saying to me, why can't you be like everybody else? Why, you know, like it's a 9-to-5 job. Why can't you turn up at 9? You know, I mean, at one stage, I lived on the 4th floor, worked on the 2nd floor. If I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, still wouldn't make it by 9. You know,
that's the end of your first 20.
There you go.
I'll go on to the next one.
And, so what I'm going to finish out with saying is the following. That was, I'm sober now about 15 years or so, and I'm still not married, which means I really haven't been getting a lot of sex at all for 15 years. And it's turned out that it hasn't been like my life has not fallen apart. As a matter of fact, I feel more a man now than I did back then. And I have this freedom. And now it really is optional. And it's not because I'm old. It's because my life is just, I don't know, you know, I got a great life. And I live very happily. And I live very happily, you know, I can live happily alone. So I'm open, you know, I'm open to the possibility of being in a relationship again. But I'm not going looking to fall in love. I think if it's in my higher power's will for me to be in a relationship, I don't have to go looking for that relationship. Yeah. My job in life now is to give God options and then let's see which one God picks up. And I leave it there for today. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Brandon.
I would like to thank you for listening to this episode of The Daily Reprieve, the best source for experience, strength, and hope for SA members. Please subscribe to this podcast to be alerted of new episodes. Please show your support by donating to The Daily Reprieve by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and choosing either monthly donations or a one-time donation by clicking Donate Now. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode of The Daily Reprieve.